From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Thursday's weekly press conference at the Russian Foreign Ministry in Moscow gave some insight into how Russia is relating to former Soviet republics over the coronavirus emergency. This is the spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova, at her Thursday press conference.
The current situation with coronavirus, according to the last news on coronavirus spread in the world, we see that it has been impossible to reverse the upward trend in the number of infected people and reach a stable plateau. The number of infected people has come close to 12 million in a number of countries, with the general positive dynamics of the virus weakening. The current of a second wave of local clusters of the epidemic has been noted. The peculiarity of the situation is that the infection makes no one immune, penetrating everywhere, even into isolated from modern civilization regions. The WHO leadership continues to warn the world community that the virus has not yet been defeated. It is actively spreading across the planet, and the situation requires even greater vigilance, unity of states, mutual assistance, and cooperation. I'd like to tell you about the example of a cooperation of our country and the assistance to other countries. On the example of the Republic of Kazakhstan, Russia provides comprehensive assistance to Kazakhstan in combating coronavirus infection, including through regional authorities. Thus, in accordance with the order of the government of the Russian Federation from July 4, on July 7, the flight of Russia delivered to Nur-Sultan the medical medicine, and another flight is also delivered and will deliver another batch of assistance. Ministry of Emergency Situations of Russia sent a team of 32 doctors and medical personnel to Nur-Sultan the same day. The Moscow city government sent a group of 23 Russian specialists, infectious disease specialists, epidemiologists, anesthesiologists, and pulmonologists to Almaty. The other day, the governor of the Astrakhan region made a decision to send a team of doctors to Atyrau to assist Kazakhstan colleagues in fight against the pandemic. Since February 2020, 18,000 test systems and 44,000 reagents for diagnostics of coronavirus infections have been transferred to Kazakhstan on a free basis, and the coming days, taking into account the worsening epidemic situation, 50,000 additional test systems and reagents will be sent to Kazakhstan. Assistance to Kazakhstan is also provided by Russian NGOs. More than 100,000 masks, 20,000 pairs of gloves, thermometers, and antiseptics. A partial list of assistance that representatives of the Russian civil sector will send to the regions of Kazakhstan during July. NGOs from Moscow, Yekaterinburg, Ufa, Saratov, Astrakhan, Novosibirsk, Orenburg, and Kazan will join the campaign. The first batch of humanitarian aid will be handed over on July 15 in Kostanai by the Ural-Eurasia Expert Club from Yekaterinburg, and then it will expand to Petropavlovsk, Akshetau, Uralsk, Atyrau, Nur-Sultan, and Almaty. As it is expected, this initiative, in the spirit of the tradition of good neighborly relationships and cooperation, will contribute to cooperation between Russia and Kazakhstan and Russia's assistance to coronavirus. Also, the cycle of lectures have been carried out by the Russian experts for the prevention of the coronavirus infection. And getting to our really close to us issue, the situation with bringing back our compatriots from abroad. I would like to sum up the outcomes of the recent developments on helping our compatriots to come back, those who got stuck abroad because of the complicated epidemiological situation. The whole number is has amounted to 52,000 people by Russian air carriers, and the others are by foreign airlines and chartered flights with the cooperation of Russian governmental structures. Last week, we successfully finalized the campaign of helping our citizens from Latin America, from Caracas, Quito, and San Jose. We helped 264 people, families with small children, the elderly compatriots. Despite the regional situation of the region, I'd like to point out that we helped also those who spend a lot of time working and living in Latin American countries, and the tourists, those who really faced a very complicated situation due to the pandemic, and they had no options to come back home. We were maintaining communication with them by phone and messages. We are well aware of the situation, and we are glad that the situation finally was solved. So as a feedback, we received a great number of letters and calls thanking us and thanking those who were involved in this program. For our part, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs would like to express gratitude to our colleagues from the Ministry of Communication, Rosaviation, those who were actively helping the people, and our diplomats from the missions, Latin American Department of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and of course, Azur Air Company, whose boards were involved in helping our compatriots to come back home, and who allowed also pets on board. That has also become a good tradition. Those who, due to various reasons, stay in Latin American countries, and it includes those people who decided to stay there due to their family situations, our ministry is ready to provide any necessary assistance, helping them to come back home. All the information is on our website. Next week, we plan to organize flights from New York, Seoul, Shanghai, Amsterdam, Paris, Frankfurt, and the states of Central Asia and Caucasus. Within the next 7-10 days, we plan to organize new flights for our compatriots from the U.S., Los Angeles, and from Goa, Phuket, and other Asian countries. This will include the participation of Russian airlines. I always pay attention to the states where there are no flights organized for helping our compatriots, and I'm speaking here about the organization of sort of hubs and organizing transit. Those who register the portal of state services or governmental services have to get the details of the flights, and they have to refer to us, and they have to, they can count on the support from the diplomats. Be vigilant and start thinking about the consequences before the event happened. Unfortunately, it is not possible to cope with the situation all alone.
По
We have other programs and plans in terms of such flights for our citizens, but I will notify about them later as soon as we start the implementation. Now we move on to the agenda of Foreign Minister on July 10. Foreign Minister Lavrov will participate in the 6th International Forum of Primakov Readings. The forum will be organized by video conference and it will be organized within the framework of joint project of Primakov Institute of World Economy and International Relations of the Russian Academy of Science and the Interfax News Agency. It is expected that the minister will share his assessment of the international situation and answer the question of the forum participants. The discussion will be moderated by the institute's president, academician Dinkin. The event will be broadcast live on the Interfax website and on YouTube and on the website of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia. This meeting will conclude a series of sessions within the forum, which took place from 29th of May to 2nd of July, organized remotely. You know the reason why this happens due to the challenging sanitary and epidemiological situation. The discussion touched upon a wide range of issues of world politics, economy, and international security, of course. The discussion were attended by representatives of the Russian Foreign Ministry, leadership, prominent national and foreign scientists and experts. Primakov Readings, I remind you, is an international forum on global economics and politics founded in 2015, dedicated to the memory of Primakov. Over the years, it has evolved into a constantly operating and respected discussion platform that allows for a dynamic, informal exchange of expert opinions and outlining solutions to pressing problems at a time when the world is facing serious challenges associated with the spread of a new coronavirus infection. Such a conversation is quite relevant. Now we move on to the international agenda. On July 14, as part of the UN High-Level Political Forum in New York, Russia will, for the first time ever, present its voluntary national review on implementation of UN Sustainable Development Goals. This event was preceded by almost 2 years of preparatory work, which included the collection of a full array of information on the implementation of each of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, as well as several rounds of consultations with representatives of federal executive authorities, non-governmental organizations, business and scientific community. The document, developed as a result of this multi-stage process, contains a deep analysis of socioeconomic transformations in the Russian Federation in order to achieve the objectives defined by the international community in the Agenda 2030, and it also gives an idea of the prospects of implementing sustainable development goals in Russia within the time frames set by the World Organization until 2030. Among the most significant achievements are the complete eradication of poverty in Russia according to the scale used in the UN, ensuring universal coverage of health services, guaranteed education for all children, and 100% access to electricity for all residents of the country. The last fact, by the way, was recently noted in the May report of the UN Nations Structure Sustainable Energy for All. We believe that this material will be of interest to those who monitor the implementation of the socioeconomic agenda in our country and will also be useful for comparing the results achieved with those of other states that have submitted or will submit similar progress reviews on their sustainable development track. Minister of Economic Development of the Russian Federation, Mr. Reshetnikov, will personally present the review. It will be followed by an interactive session with other delegations and representatives of non-governmental organizations. The broadcast will begin on the UN website at 5:30 Moscow time, 5:30 p.m. On July 14, a printed version of the document in Russian and English is also available on the website of the World Organization, and we will share it on the website of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and International Networks. There are not really good news, which all of you are aware of. As you know, Great Britain introduced personal sanctions against Russian citizens. We believe that The decision of the government of these countries to impose the sanctions against a number of officials of our country and the framework of the so-called Magnitsky case is another unfriendly step of the British authorities. On all accounts related to the death of Sergei Magnitsky, and we have repeatedly given exhaustive comments and explanations, which apparently in London prefer not to notice. It is not clear on what basis they appoint the guilty and determine their punishment. Therefore, the actions of the British side cannot be called other than an attempt to interfere in the internal affairs of another state and put pressure on the Russian justice system. I would like also to remind London that for such arrogant and mentoring decisions, Britain's reputation in the human rights field is far from perfect. And the best colonial traditions, the cases of crimes committed by British soldiers during the Iraqi campaign, in particular, have been massively closed there. The case of high-ranking Westminster pedophiles has been pushed up. The facts of the illegal collection of personal data of their own subjects by British intelligence agencies have surfaced. And these and many other outrageous facts have been repeatedly pointed out to London by international governmental and non-governmental organizations. Undoubtedly, this politically motivated decision will have a very negative impact on the bilateral relations of our countries, which have already been seriously damaged by the British side in the past few years. We recall that also that the principle of reciprocity is one of the fundamental in interstate relations. We therefore reserve the right to an adequate response and call on London to abandon the language of baseless allegations, choosing the path of a civilized dialogue on existing problems and concerns. Moving on to other topics, we continue to follow the situation of Mr. Yaroshenko, who is now in U.S. Prison. He was in Liberia, then moved to Russia, to the United States, and all the accusations were trumped up. Our embassy in Washington regularly communicates with Yaroshenko and is interested in his health condition, which has been undermined as a result of the harsh interrogations arranged by the U.S. law enforcement officers and his long stay in prison. We require the American side to provide him with necessary treatment. As a result of long efforts, some important medical examinations have recently been organized for the Russian citizen. We would also like to draw attention to the fact that in response to our repeated appeals to release and return to their homeland on humanitarian grounds, Yaroshenko, as well as all other compatriots who remained in the U.S. in prison or under investigation, there was no positive decision by official by Washington. We were assured that they do everything to prevent the virus from spreading. In fact, as it later became known, in the same overcrowded prison where Yaroshenko is kept, prisoners are given only one medical mask per week, while the daily increase in the number of people infected with the coronavirus in the country sometimes exceeds 50,000, I'm speaking about the U.S. Having learned about the difficulties, our embassy in Washington tried to hand over the personal protective equipment to Yaroshenko, but the prison representatives refused to meet the requirements. In this regard, we once again call on the U.S. authorities to reconsider the approach and to allow the Russians in detention to finally return home, which would be a welcome manifestation of humane treatment of those whose lives are in daily danger. At the same time, we regularly communicate in media the information that Russia we hear that there is information about Russia is allegedly participating in espionage, and there is also information about Mr. Whelan, who is also the holder of the passports of three other states. We would like to receive clarifications on all these issues, because we receive all the fake information from our American partners. They publish this trumped-up information in the media. They provide fake comments. The Russian Foreign Ministry has been working with our diplomatic missions on a permanent basis for many years to protect the legal rights and interests of Russian citizens imprisoned in the U.S. Every effort is being made to release our compatriots as soon as possible who are facing a biased, often politically motivated attitude of the American justice system. This includes Konstantin Yaroshenko, Viktor Bout. We speak regularly about his fate. He was imprisoned as a result of a provocation by U.S. agents. Bogdana Osipova, sentenced to a long term in the U.S. for just removing her own children from the country, and many other Russian citizens. Once again, I would like to emphasize rumors about the allegations ongoing discussions with the American side of the probable schemes of exchange of women for our citizens do not correspond to reality.
Another topic relating to the United States and the coronavirus. We've taken note on the new steps of the United States to withdraw from the World Health Organization. Previously, we have already given an assessment of this country's position with regard to the WHO. We continue to consider it unconstructive. Against the background of reports received from Washington, it seems difficult to explain the participation of American representatives in the session of the World Health Assembly. The governing body of the said organization is resulted in the adoption of the resolution confirming the leading coordinating role of the organization, the WHO, in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. It is noteworthy that the document was adopted by consensus, so taking into account the opinion of the U.S. delegation, it is unclear whether the U.S. is going to continue to participate in WHO as an observer, as it was the case with UNESCO, where the Americans again left it in 2017. Trump's administration left without an answer the question of whether the U.S. plans to draw American experts seconded to WHO, including those in superior positions, and to prohibit its experts from serving in numerous WHO expert committees. Frankly speaking, we would like to know if the United States of America intend to be consistent and withdraw from the Pan American Health Organization, formerly remains an independent structure, although in practice is the original office of the WHO, and the International Agency for Research on Cancer, another organization association with the WHO. So maybe the United States should provide the answers for the questions. In this challenging time, so we also do not understand whether Washington is ready to stop being a party to the WHA international health regulations. It is a legally binding instrument governing multilateral engagement in public health emergencies, and not to participate in a possible revision of the international health regulation in the light of experience in responding to a coronavirus pandemic. We continue to oppose the politicization of global health cooperation. Once again, we emphasize that COVID-19 is a challenge to the entire international community, and that an effective fight against the pandemic can be possible only through concerted action involving all the states, and you know that is our principal position. And we are guided by this in preparation for the special session of the UN General Assembly on COVID-19 initiative, which we previously supported. We hope for constructive, non-discriminatory discussion on further joint steps to counter the spread of the pandemic and to overcome its negative consequences. The topic that we repeatedly highlight is the prevention and creating obstacles to the work of the Russian TV channels working abroad, in particular working in Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. We continue to preserve a cynical violation of international obligations. In the field of the media in the Baltic countries, which are increasingly hiding their obsession with Russophobia and intention to get rid of the Russian media presence in their media space. We mean the attack of the leadership of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia on TV channels of the RT Media Group, and the coordinated nature of this attack is obvious, and it is confirmed by the representatives of these countries publicly. We would like to remind you that on the 30th of June it became known about the decision to block the rebroadcasting of 7 TV channels of RT Group in Latvia, and the basis of this decision, the so-called personal sanctions of the European Union against the COF Mir, Russia Today, Dmitry Kiselev, who has nothing to do with the media holding RT, which we has already stated. Further on the 1st of July, the Lithuanian Radio and Television Commission reported that following its Latvian colleagues, it was ready to apply the same measures against the same sources with the same far-fetched justification. The decision is will come into force today. It was enthusiastically supported by Lithuanian Foreign Minister Linas Liskovits, recalling that Lithuania began to apply restriction against Russia media 7 years ago. And these words should be heard in Brussels, in Vienna, and in the OSCE, and in many other structures, including NGOs, media structures, and so on and so forth. But it is not the end of the story. A few days later, on the 6th of July, Estonian Foreign Minister spoke out in support of Latvia action to ban the broadcasting of RT TV channels and promised to analyze the effectiveness of such measures in Estonia. So this is a real-time carousel, and the vicious connection between the Baltic states relating to their attitude to the media. After such facts, we can hardly have a need to comment on this statement. They do not know. It is very puzzling that neither of the your member states have commented on the violation of the fundamental rights of freedoms and democratic rights of the media in these countries. And we believe that the Brussels unacceptable silence on these numerous episodes of discrimination against the domestic media in the Baltic countries that unleashed the hands of the letters leadership against the Russian media holding. These undemocratic steps surely discredit these countries and run counter to the obligations to ensure the media freedoms. This is everything that we are saying, but we are not heard, and we hope that the international community will react and respond to such violations. We do not need an investigation of these cases because we have direct violations of the obligations that these countries has assumed, and they believe it to be the priority of their policy, and we would file a special request to UNESCO and other structures for them to have this kind of information. And we have also taken note of the European Commission for Democracy through Law, the Venice Commission of the Council of Europe. Sorry to say, the experts of the Venice Commission showed a biased position and actually supported the policy of Latvia We strongly urge Riga to support universal and regional norms and mechanisms on the national minority rights, which were adopted in UN, the Council of Europe, CEE. And I would like to remind the partners of the European Union that the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights just proclaims the ban of all types of discrimination, including the national minorities.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.